Okay, let's go ahead and get started in Proverbs chapter 26. Anyone remember what we left off with last week? The slothful man. We were too lazy to cover laziness last week, so we left it for this week. That the way it goes? It was not laziness, it was lack of time. Okay, so Proverbs, and we're going to be in chapter 26 down at verse number 13. But before we read it, let's go ahead and go to the Lord in prayer, and then we will look at the lazy man. Dear Lord, we come to you today. Just thank you so much for your blessings, and we thank you for this time that we have to come together in church, Lord. And I just pray for your blessings upon the service, Lord. I just pray that you would just meet with us here tonight, Lord, and use this to help us, to instruct us, to draw us closer to you, Lord. Lord, I pray you'd honor our faithfulness, Lord. And Lord, as we come out, Lord, we are acknowledging you're worthy of our time and of our efforts and of our attention, Lord. We desire to grow in our walk with you, Lord. And I just pray, Lord, ask you that you would just be with me and guide and direct me as I teach these things, Lord. Help me to say the things that are needful and accurate, Lord. I pray you'd be with the rest of our church family, Lord, that aren't with us tonight due to work or schedule or lack of desire, even, Lord. I just pray that you would work in people's lives and draw them out, Lord, that they would desire to be around your word, around your people, Lord. I ask you, Lord, that you please be with Longford Town. I pray that we can be a witness to the folks that we come in contact with, Lord, that they can see you in our lives, Lord, and Lord, come to know you because they know us. And Lord, we just thank you so much for all that you do. And always, I pray in Jesus' name and amen. Okay, so Proverbs chapter number 26, verse number 13, and really verses 13 through 16 is dealing with the same topic here. So I'll go ahead and read those verses. It says, "The slothful man saith, there is a lion in the way, a lion is in the streets. As the door turneth upon the hinges, so doth the slothful upon his bed. The slothful hideth his hand in his bosom, it grieveth him to bring it to again to his mouth. The sluggard is wiser in his own conceit than seven men that can render a reason." And so we kind of finished up last week with talking about the fool, and now we're, well, the fool and the conceited man, right? So now we're moving to the slothful man. And with many different things, it seems like Solomon didn't really have a whole lot of patience with a lot of these folks, right? With the fool, with the conceited, with the slothful. Not that he didn't have the patience, he didn't have the time. That might be a better way to put it, because we wouldn't want to say, well, he lost his patience or he didn't have patience. He just didn't have time for him. He said, they're not worth my time. I'm not fooling with them. And he's advising his son and then all of us as well, don't be this person and don't be around these people. As the old saying goes, your crowd's going to determine your character, right? So who you hang out with is going to determine what you become like, what you surround yourself with. It's not just even who, but what you allow to influence you is going to determine what you end up like. So he's saying, don't let these things be in your life so that they're not going to influence you in the wrong direction. So in verse number 13, he's talking about the slugger that says there's a lion in the streets. There's a lion out in the way. And whenever we look at this verse, we might think, a lion, yeah, I'd stay inside too, right? Anyone want to take on a lion? No. But the sluggard is looking for an excuse. I can't go out there. There may be a bear. Can't go out there. There's a lion out there. It's dangerous. I'm going to stay inside. We'll stay where it's safe and we'll stay where it's easy and we'll stay where it's comfortable. There's a lion out there. I'm staying here. So he's looking for an excuse. And so, as I said, a lion in the streets might seem like a reasonable way to stay put to us. But in places where such predators are common, you think about the big five down in Africa. You could easily say, I can't go to church today. I might run into an elephant. You know how dangerous it is to travel, right? So in places where there are such predators, you're going to run off a lion, You're going to run off the animals. You're going to, if you can't do it yourself, you're going to get a group of people and you're going to run them off and you're going to go about your day. You deal with the problem and you move on. But the slothful man, he sees the problem and the problem is enough to stop him. Don't deal with the problem. Don't take care of the problem. Just stop trying because there is a problem. And that's basically what this verse is saying. He's saying there's a problem. I'm going to stay put. But the productive man says, here's a problem. Let's fix it. And so it's a matter of perspective or a matter of attitude. Is the problem something to stop you? Is it a wall to keep you in? Or is it something for you to overcome to make progress further down the road? And so further, this verse states that he says there's a lion in the way. Right? It never says there is a lion. He says there's a lion in the way. And so it seems to indicate that it's really more of an excuse than a real problem. Because we could give him a pass on if there's a lion. He's like, yeah, look out the window. There it is. I'm not going outside. Okay, let's stay here for a while and see if he moves on. But it just says he says there's a lion in the way. And so the lion may not even be there. So beware of the one who is always looking for an excuse or the one that will let any inconvenience stop him. And then don't be that person either. There's a lion. But he was lying. There was no lion. So he decided to have a lion. Okay. I've got enough groans out of that. So let's move on to verse 14. As the... Now you guys will remember that verse. Anyway, verse 14. As the door turneth upon his hinges, so doth the slothful upon his bed. That just paints a picture, doesn't it? Can't you just see the slothful man turning like a door opening and closing on his bed? You been that person in a time or two this week? Okay. So as the door moves back and forth on its hinges, it moves, right? But it doesn't get very far. Doesn't accomplish much, right? It moves back and forth on its hinges. And so Solomon seems to be a little bit sarcastic in saying all of the activity of a lazy person isn't getting him very far. The most activity they get is tossing and turning on their own bed. Like, I got my exercise. I rolled over four times. Okay. Person says, yeah, I did exercise. I did squats, diddly squats. Does bending over to tie your shoe, is that exercise?
Some people, yes.
For some people, the most exercise they get is running their mouth. And so as the door moves back and forth, so the lazy person gets back and forth on his bed. He doesn't get very far. And so if you expect minimum efforts, minimum results are going to be what you're going to have. Okay, expect minimum effort out of them, expect minimum results. They're not going to go very far. Okay? Okay. Anything to add to that? Don't need to make up a rhyme or pun to go with that one.
Hang on.
Verse 15. It says, the slothful hideth his hand in his bosom, and it grieveth him to bring it again to his mouth. Have you ever heard anything similar to that? You know what it means? We've got a modern version of this that I've heard a lot. That boy's so lazy, he wouldn't even taste pies in a pie factory. You've heard that? That's what Solomon just said. Because it says, the slothful man hideth his hand in his bosom, and it grieveth him to bring it again to his mouth. It's so much effort, so much work to just pick up his fork. I don't know if they had a fork back then. They probably weighed more. Do you think they were made out of stone? Anyway.
What?
So it grieves him to lift his hand and feed himself. So he's using a little bit of sarcasm, a little bit of exaggeration here, because that would be really a lazy person. But back to the whole thing of too lazy to taste pies in a pie factory. Can you imagine someone quitting that job? It's like same thing every day, blueberry and apple. I'm sick of eating pie. Right?
Yeah.
They just roll in and roll out. It makes it easier to turn up on your bed. Or harder, I don't know. And so Solomon's saying that this person, this lazy person's allergic to work, and that lifting a fork would be too much exertion for them. So you're really catching on here that Solomon has no patience for a lazy person, saying just feeding themselves is as much work as you're going to get out of them. Okay, and then verse 16 is where we stopped reading. I'll read it again. It says, "The sluggard is wiser in his own conceit than seven men that can render a reason." Okay, so this one gets a little bit more difficult, right? But it ties back in with what we read in verse number 11 last week. Verse 11 said, "As a dog turneth to his own vomit, so a fool returneth to his folly." Okay? I might have the wrong verse that I'm tying that to. No, verse 12 is what I meant to read. "Seest thou a man wise in his own conceit, there is more hope than a fool of him." So another one, wise in his own conceit. Right? There's little hope for them. "So the sluggard is wiser in his own conceit than seven men that can render a reason." Ignore the dog in his vomit. Okay? The sluggard is too lazy to put in the work to study and to form his own informed positions. Right? And instead, he is going to come up with half-baked ideas and regurgitate things that he's heard and do it with great confidence, not willing to entertain any further information. So you deal with those kind of people, especially online. There's tons of those on there that have their ideas that, "I believe this." "Well, why do you believe this?" "Because I heard it here." "Have you done any research in it? Do you actually know that's true?" And so you get like all these conspiracy theories and can't talk anybody out of them, right? That's kind of what he's talking about here, is these people who are wise in their own conceit. They have such confidence in their intelligence and their intellect, but no substance to back it up. They have no reason for the confidence, right? We talked a little bit, I think, last week about the Dunning-Kruger effect, that the less you know, the more confident you are in your ability. Kind of the same idea here. And so they are confident in their half-baked ideas, but they're not willing to entertain further information because that would require effort on their part. And so this laziness makes them an arrogant fool. It's too much effort to actually look into it, so I'm just going to be confident in what I think and what I believe, regardless of if there's anything true about it. And so this comes to another common phrase that we have in the States. You've heard the phrase armchair quarterback. Yeah. Okay, what does that mean? Not quite.
It means you're not the coach or the one to be able to make calls, but you're trying to boss everybody. Or you'd like to tell them what's wrong and how to fix it.
Okay. So the picture of it with an armchair quarterback is the person who is watching the game from their armchair, right? Mm-hmm. Telling what everybody's doing wrong. "Ref, are you blind? Coach should have done this. Boy, you ran the wrong direction. You should have threw it this way. You should have called this play." Right? And he's sitting in his chair, eating his snacks. Probably hasn't seen his feet in years, right? Let alone actually getting on him and down the field, but he knows what everybody else should be doing. That's the armchair quarterback. And so he's a fat spectator that criticizes everything that he has zero ability to do himself. Okay? And so it's kind of the same idea as what we're seeing here in verse number 16. The sluggard's wiser in his own conceit than seven men that can render a reason. The people on that ball field have had to study things out. They've had to learn the plays. They've had to train. They've had to do the exercises. They've had to do season after season of going through the games and all. And they have worked hard to get where they're at, right? Mm-hmm. They definitely have a reason for what they're doing. Even whenever the play falls through, even whenever they're not successful, there was a reason they were running what they were running. And they can probably tell you why it failed or what they should have done differently. But that guy that's sitting in his armchair, he hasn't put in that effort. And it is very easy for him to criticize and do so confidently and arrogantly whenever he has nothing to lose and has put no effort into it.
Yeah.
So this isn't just about sporting events and all, but we're using this as an example. There are plenty of people that approach life this way. They have all the opinions of what you should be doing and how you should have done things, right? No skin in the game. Or people who have different beliefs and ideas about things. Even back in COVID, I hate to bring that up because that's history now, but there were plenty of people who were trying to refute everything that scientists and medical professionals were saying, as if they knew what they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's some happy medium there. You can't just follow a sheep, but you also can't think that your, you know, YouTube degree trumps theirs, right? So anyway, I've kind of gotten a little bit of everywhere with this, but the point in this is that we shouldn't be so lazy as to not do our research, not do our homework. If you're going to stand on something, make sure there's substance on what you're standing on. Make sure that you're actually being intellectually honest enough to look for the reasons behind what you believe or what you're doing or what you're thinking, rather than just go about arrogantly arguing about things that you have no idea about. Okay? And on the opposite way of this, make sure that the people who you are listening to have a little bit of an idea of what they're talking about, because it is easy for people to spout nonsense and do it with great confidence. Right? Plenty of people doing that. And so you think, for instance, I often go back to Rehoboam, right? And so he had some men who had been there, they'd done the work, and they understood the politics of the day. They understood diplomacy and how to relate to the people and how to run a kingdom. He had access to them, and they gave him good, solid advice. But who'd he go to? The armchair quarterbacks, right? And so that's what ended up happening with him. Okay, so any questions or comments on the sluggard or the lazy person? Okay, then, verse 17. He that passeth by and meddleth with strife belonging not to him is like one that taketh a dog by the ears. We've talked about this one recently, haven't we? Okay. So this is a great verse that simply says to mind your own business. I could just leave it there, but you know, I won't. Okay. Some people like drama, and they like to get in the middle of other people's problems. Often, it's going to get them into trouble. Probably most of the time, it will get them in trouble. You don't start stirring the pot without eventually having to lick the stick. Right? Others make it their ministry to help those that never ask. You all know from whenever you were little, whenever I'd always say, help's not help when it's not wanted. And so there are people who see people struggling, and maybe even from the goodness of their heart. They might be completely sincere, and they're trying to help someone who does not want help. You're going to get yourself in trouble. Or trying to advise someone who never asked for advice. Okay? You're probably going to get yourself in trouble. You're at least going to be frustrated because your advice will not be heeded, because it's not going to be heeded if it was never asked for. Very few people will listen to unsolicited advice. In the day of social media and comment sections, people feel like they have a right to, maybe even an obligation to chime in to everything, or to offer up their opinion on every subject, whether they have any knowledge of it or not. There's like an epidemic of that. You want to know what I think about this? No, I really don't. Well, if I was you, I'm glad you're not. Right? If I was in your position, okay, have you ever been in this position? No, I haven't. Okay, then I don't want to hear it. You don't know what you're talking about. You're just shooting off your mouth. Utter nonsense, right? And that's not saying that we're to be unteachable or we're to resist everything that people say. We're to vet the voices that we're allowed to speak into our lives, right? And don't be taking advice from someone who doesn't know what they're talking about. Don't be taking advice from those who are inexperienced, those who are not involved, those who don't have any skin in the game. I know for one thing, that might be two-sided because you don't want someone who's involved to where they're going to be biased. Okay? But if they can just flippantly give you advice and then go down their way and not even think about it again, and whenever it blows up in your face, like, oh, I forgot I even said that. You want them to actually care about you. Okay. But anyway, back on track here. Whenever there are people who are advising, whenever the advice is not asked for, they're chiming in on everything, making their opinion known, that they feel as if they have a right to opine on everything coming and going, it's a recipe for trouble. And so if they are meddling in some kind of trouble or drama that doesn't belong to them, it's like walking down the road, seeing a dog and yanking its ear. What's going to happen if you just pass by a dog, a random dog, and yank its ear?
It bites you.
It's going to bite you. You sound like you've experienced that. Maybe truly and proverbially both?
Hypothetically.
Sure. Anyway. And so these are a recipe for trouble and stress. Meddling in other people's business is a good way to get hit, and rightfully so. You will get your I's dotted. And so you fight the urge to meddle and keep right on walking. Think before you speak or act, and you can think or ask yourself, does this pertain to me? Is this any of my business? Is my involvement wanted, and is it necessary? Because a lot of times it's not even necessary. It's like, do I need to speak here? No need for it. Right? And so if it's a no to those, then stay out of it. Otherwise, it's like pulling a dog's ear and you're going to get bit. Okay? So you want a peaceful life. Stay out of other people's troubles. Okay? Any questions or comments on that one? I'm sure we've all seen that and maybe experienced it firsthand. Seen other people experience it. But it's good advice. Okay, verses 18 and 19. I think we can get through the end of the chapter.
Yeah.
Okay, 18 and 19. As a madman who casteth firebrands, arrows, and death, so is the man that deceiveth his neighbor and saith, am not I in sport? What's that last part mean? That's just joking. Can you not take a joke? I didn't really mean it. Right? And so here we have the impractical joker. Okay? It's a common excuse whenever things go too far, or someone gets hurt, or someone gets rightfully offended, to say, I was just joking. Just playing with you. You know I didn't mean it. Everyone knows I didn't mean anything by it. Or, you know, your favorite here. Can't you take a joke? Because that is the person who did the wrong blaming the person who was wronged. Kind of, I guess the trending phrase now is victim blaming or victim shaming. Anyway, to abuse others and expect to be let off the hook simply by saying it's a joke and to throw off shame onto the victim instead of the perpetrator is foolishness, stupidity, isn't it? And so he's saying here that it's as a madman that casts firebrands, arrows, and death. So can you picture in your mind a crazy person with weapons? I think we would more liken this to some crazy drunk person just firing rounds off into the air. Can you? Right?
Oh, yeah.
We can kind of imagine that. Okay, that's kind of the same thing here. Only, you know, firebrand is going to catch the people that's like right around them. Right? And so you don't want a crazy man with a weapon. But whenever someone is harming people, deceiving people, because it specifically says a man that deceiveth his neighbor. There's all kinds of different deceptions, right? But lying, misleading, right? Trying to make them think one thing whenever it's really something else, right? And then someone gets hurt about it. Says, I can't believe you're hurt about that. That was just a joke. We see plenty of that. People who don't know what a prank is, don't know what an actual joke is, and they end up hurting people. And then act upset whenever someone actually is hurt or offended by it. Right? This is the kind of person he's talking about here. And so you can't put off your bad behavior on someone else. You can't have your bad behavior having the consequences falling on everyone else and then deflecting it off of yourself. Right? Acting like an idiot and expecting to get off scot-free is not a good person, right? And so don't put off the responsibility of your bad behavior on someone else. Don't think of deceiving someone as being fun. And consider others and the effects of your actions. And stay away from mad men with firebrands. Right? So a lot of this that we're reading through here is Solomon teaching his son to be observant, to be discerning. And discernment is a huge word in all of this. And so as you're going around and you're taking note and you're saying, I see how this person acts. It's not someone I want to be like, not someone I want to be around. Right? If I act like that person, I'm going to get the same problems that that person has. I'll stay away from them. If I get too close to this person, they're bad about casting their firebrands. They're bad about their impractical jokes. They're bad about harming other people with their words and then acting like it was a joke. They don't take it seriously whenever they hurt other people. We'll stay away from them. I guess that would be a good way to summarize that, not taking seriously whenever you do harm to others. Right? And so stay away from those kind of people. And as I said, make sure that the person you see in the mirror is not one of them. Okay, verse number 20. Where no wood is, there the fire goeth out. So where there is no talebearer, the strife ceaseth. And then we have verse 21, similar. As coals are to burning coals and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. Contentious, kindle. There we go. It's amazing that the trouble that gets stirred up by a talebearer or by someone with a big mouth. Okay? Not everything needs to be said. And so a person who is a big mouth, a talebearer, a gossip, someone always running their mouth is going to leave chaos in their wake. Right? And that goes for families, churches, workplaces. And so it's good if you can get rid of the talebearer. But how do you get rid of a talebearer? Okay. You think calling them out works?
Yeah. Oh, I feel at least talebearer to you.
I find a lot of times whenever you confront them, it makes you the target. Right? But anyway, it's very difficult to break them of their bad behavior. And as I said, if you try to try to get to them, try to reason with them, there's a good chance that you're going to be their target. But the best way to deal with the talebearer is to close your ears rather than expecting them to close their mouth. Okay? You have no control over their mouth, but you have control over your ears and over your own mouth. And so gossip ends whenever it reaches the ears of a wise person. Right? And if you refuse to listen and you don't participate, they're going to pass by you, and if the majority of people in that situation stop listening, they stop. And so you take away the wood, the fire goes out. So if it's a toxic workplace, then if the sane people can get together and quit listening to the one insane person, then the one insane person has to go talk to themselves. That's kind of simple enough, isn't it? It's just a matter of finding enough wise people to put an end to it. And so if you want the fire to go out, you have to stop feeding it. Simple as that. And that goes for a lot of different situations, but especially that one. If you want the fire to go out, stop feeding it. And then we looked at verse 22. The words of a talebearer are, or no, verse 21, excuse me. Verse 21, as coals are burning coals and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. So coals and wood burn. A contentious man makes strife. And this is just another one of the things that you can discern, you can judge that this type of person is going to do this type of thing. It's the nature of it, right? Coal burns, wood burns, contentious people create problems. And so you have to learn to discern which ones are the contentious ones and stay away from them, because if you don't get close to the fire, you won't get burned. Okay, so any questions or comments on 21 and 22? Or 20 and 21? Okay, 22, we're continuing with the talebearer. The words of a talebearer are as wounds, and they go down into the innermost parts of the belly. Solomon did not believe the old saying that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Right? But he said there is wounds going down in the deepest part of the belly. This is a reason to shun the talebearer. Gossip isn't merely harmless fun. It causes people pain. It ruins reputations. And oftentimes it starts small and quickly grows beyond what anyone expected, even the person who said it. How many times have you heard, I never expected it to go so far? Yeah. Just a little harmless fun. Now we're getting back to the other one, right? In Solomon's day, they didn't have the medical knowledge that we do today. And they had probably seen many small wounds get infected, fester, and end up killing people. Mm-hmm. And so he says that the words of a talebearer are as a wound that goes down into the innermost parts of the belly. It's this idea, stab a person with your words. It gets inside of them, it festers, it grows, and it destroys. Right? It might be a small wound, just a puncture, but it has lasting and multiplying effects. And so even small wounds could cause severe damage. And the Bible clearly, as I said, refutes the saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, right? But words will never hurt me. It says words hurt. They cause lasting effects. They have increasing, growing, multiplying effects, and they do great harm to people. And so we need to watch what we say and watch what we listen to, and have no room for someone who engages in such behavior and such hobbies. Okay. So any questions or comments on the talebearer, the gossip, the blabbermouth? Talking about talking and no one wants to talk. Okay. Now the rest of the chapter actually goes together. And so we're going to go ahead and read 23 through 28, and we will finish the chapter today. Okay. So burning lips and a wicked heart are like a potsherd covered with silver dross. He that hateth dissembleth with his lips and layeth up deceit with him, or within him. When he speaketh fair, believe him not, for there are seven abominations in his heart. Whose hatred is covered by deceit, his wickedness shall be showed before the whole congregation. Whoso diggeth a pit shall fall therein, and he that rolleth a stone, it will return upon him. A lying tongue hateth those that are affected by it, and a flattering mouth worketh ruin. So we're talking about words, right? So Solomon's expanding upon this instruction about being cautious when it comes to our words. In verse 23, he uses the image of a broken piece of pottery covered in dross, okay? And you know, whenever they would refine silver, they would heat it up, the impurities would come to the surface, they would scrape it off, and continue heating it till the impurities were going and they would get purified silver, right? And so whenever they would scrape it off the top and scrape away the dross, imagine them scraping it with a piece of pottery. What would happen with a piece of pottery? Okay, be covered in silver dross, right? But do you think that it was just the dirt that came off on it? No, you'd have nice, shiny, silvery dross on your pottery, right? And so for someone who's got an untrained eye, they look at that and they're like, oh, silver. But for the refiner, they look at that and say it's worthless. It's dross. There might be a little bit of silver in it, but there's so much rubbish, so much impurities in it, it's not worth fooling with. And so I'm going to throw it away with the potsherd. Okay? Someone might waste their time. They may go through all of the painstaking process of trying to further refine that little bit of dross and get the last little bit of silver out of it. But it's going to take more effort than it actually produces results. And so for the refiner, he knows it's worthless, right? And so what we're seeing here in verse 23, burning lips and a wicked heart are like a potsherd covered with silver dross. So what is it meaning by burning lips? I mean, you need chapstick? Okay. Okay. Generally, the idea of burning comes back to passion. There's a fire burning within me, right? There's a passion. Or I had too many jalapenos. Anyway. But the idea here is passionate words from a wicked heart. Someone can speak passionately. They can speak enthusiastically. They can be very charismatic, right? And they can draw in people to them because of the way that they speak. But the Bible says that out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. If they have a wicked heart, their words are not something that you want to latch onto either, right? Even if they present them in a way that is exciting, or even if it seems as if they've got a lot of zeal and a lot of passion behind their cause and what they're after, right? And so think about all of the protesters. Think about all of the people who are extremely passionate about what they believe, but what they believe is wicked. It's easy to get drawn into their hype. It's easy to get drawn into their passion. It's easy to fall for their burning lips, right? But you have to get to the substance of the matter, more than just the hype. We have the idea of the bandwagon, right? You guys have heard about bandwagon, getting on the bandwagon? Okay, that's something that's kind of fallen by the wayside that we still have the saying, but no one actually knows where it came from, right? But still, the idea for being on the bandwagon means that you're piling on it just because everybody else is there. Or think about the protests where people fall into the protest and they have no idea what they're even protesting about. You ever see like the pictures of everyone holding up signs and then somebody in it just has something completely goofy and they're just there for them? Just holding up a sign that has nothing to do with everything else, which is like, I like cats. In the middle of the protest? Just want to be in the middle of something? I don't know where the cats thing came from. It was the first thing that came across my mind that I could say out loud. But anyway. People are easy to get caught up in rhetoric. Easy to get caught up in the way that things are presented. Right? And so they see the zeal. They see the fire. And they think that it is silver whenever it's just dross. They think because of the way that it presents itself, that it has substance or that it's something worthy of us buying into. And he says it is as a potsherd. The heart is as a broken pot. It's a piece of pottery. It is rubbish. It is defiled. It's good for nothing. And then what comes out of the mouth, they might be able to dress it up. It might have a glint of silver in it. But just because they're passionate, just because they're zealous about it, doesn't mean that it is anything of value. Okay? So don't get caught up in the emotions. Don't get caught up in the feeling. Don't get caught up in the presentation. But instead, come back to what is right. Come back to what is true. Use your brain. Use some discernment. Don't get caught up in the gossip. Because we've been talking about gossip, right? Someone comes to you and says, oh, I just heard something. It's exciting. Right? And you're drawn into that. And you want to listen. And then you think, hold on for a second. It's in the best use of my time. This isn't something I should be engaging in. But it's easy to get sucked into it. It's that dross-covered piece of broken pottery, right? Seems to have value, but it's worthless, it's empty, and you're not going to be better off for it. Okay? Verse number 24. He that hateth dissembleth with his lips, and layeth up deceit within him. Anyone want to take a stab at that one, what it's talking about? He that hateth dissembleth with his lips, and layeth up deceit within him.
Okay, this is the more he is tearing people apart. Okay.
Oh. Dissembleth, not disassemble. Oh. Okay, dissembleth is deception. To deceive. Okay? And so the person who hates deceives other people by, what does it say there at the end of that? Dissembleth with his lips. That's what I was after. It's in the middle, not the end. So he uses his words to deceive people. So think about this for a second. This is a hypocrite. This is a false friend. Okay? This is someone who does not like you, does not have your best interest at heart, but pretends to. The way that they speak, the way that they present themselves to you is to buy you over. It is to deceive you, right? Last part of the verse, layeth up deceit within him, right? And so the hateful person makes everybody think that they are something that they're not. They are able to put on a facade. They're able to put on a front. They're able to wear a mask. And that's what the word hypocrite means. It is a play actor, someone who wears a mask. Okay? So it's saying here he's using words to cover up who he really is, his true character, his true identity. And so the person who hates dissembles or hides his true self through his words. This is the one that speaks nicely to your face and he talks about you behind your back. And so the warning here is that some use words to hide their true feelings or their true intentions. And this is a good example of the saying, talk is cheap. Okay. And so what's implied in the saying, talk is cheap, and I believe there's more to the saying than just that, but what's being implied is it's the actions that really matter. You say you love me, okay, I want to see some evidence of that. Anyone can say they love me, but the way they treat you is going to determine if they actually do, right? And so pay attention to how people treat and talk about you, but also how they treat and talk about other people. Because how they talk about other people to you is how they talk about you to other people. And so how they treat and talk about people is a better indicator of who they are than the carefully crafted persona that they are putting forth with their words. Many people work hard to present a version of themselves that is carefully curated and it is made to cause others to like them or to cause people to trust them. It happens in friend groups. It happens in workplaces. It happens a lot in politics and religion. The person who's one person whenever they're in front of everyone, making sure they say the things, cause everybody to like them, mm-hmm. Completely different whenever they're away from them, right? And so it says in that verse, let me see here. He that hateth dissembleth with his lips and layeth up deceit within him. Verse 25, when he speaketh fair, believe him not, for there are seven abominations in his heart. So if you're paying attention and you realize that his words and his actions aren't matching up, discount it all, right? Discount all of his words because his actions have told you who he really is. The old saying, and I know in this study in Proverbs, I've brought it out several times, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. Mm-hmm. But whenever they tell you who they are, be a bit skeptical. There is another saying. I need to look this up so I can quote it properly. But it was the lady that was the prime minister of the UK for a while. What was her name? Anyway, she was the one that said something about if you have to, if a person has to tell you they're a lady, they probably aren't. Remember that one? Mm-hmm. I need to look that one up. But anyway, back on track here. When they speak fair, believe them not, for there are seven abominations in his heart. It's talking about the heart being the true self, what they really are, what they're really made out of. They can say one thing, but who they really are deep within, completely different. Verse 26 says, whose hatred is covered by deceit, his wickedness shall be showed before the whole congregation. Okay, so this one who has crafted his persona, the one who is hiding behind a mask, one day the mask will slip. That's what that verse is saying. The house of cards that he is so carefully building will one day crumble, will one day fall down. But the mask will slip, the true identity will come out. And how many times have we seen this happen? A politician having to go on an apology tour because the mask slipped. Or a public figure, a celebrity, all of a sudden some of their private conversations leak.
Yeah.
A video leaks. Right? A hot mic that they didn't know was on.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden their reputation takes a huge hit because the facade cracked. The mask slipped. People got to see what was actually behind all of the well-vetted and well-written speeches.
Right.
Or the carefully curated image from their PR firm. Right? Mm-hmm. But not just for celebrities and politicians, but even just our friends, our family, people are closer and maybe a little bit less prominent. Eventually, their true colors show. There'll be something that happens that lets you know who they really are. Maybe it's going to be a time of stress. Maybe it's going to be a time of difficulty, and they're not going to be able to keep that front up, and it's going to come through, and you're going to see who they really are. Right. It's going to reveal itself. And so it says, his wickedness shall be showed before the whole congregation. It says everyone is going to see who they really are before it's over with. So you know one thing that tells me? Make sure that I'm not one of the people who is fake. It doesn't last. You can't keep that up forever. And by the way, it would be so tiresome to try. That's a lot of work to kind of try to keep up with all that rather than just be sincere. Just be real. Okay, so the fakes and phonies will be found out. Verse 27, it says, whoso diggeth a pit shall fall therein, and he that rolleth a stone, it will return upon him. Another one that we could say, you reap what you sow.
Yeah.
Or Haman got hung on the gallows he built for someone else, right? It's all a good illustration of what ends up happening. Is someone puts so much effort into what they're doing, it ends up being their undoing.
Yeah.
And that's what ends up happening. And so verse 28, a lying tongue hateth those that are affected by it, and a flattering mouth worketh ruin. This reveals the truth about liars. Many will say that they lie to protect, or if they tell the truth, it might hurt someone. If I told them, then they would be ruined. Have you heard that? I can't say that. It would hurt them too much. So I'm going to lie to them. But the reality about it is they're not really caring about the person that they lie to. They're caring about themselves, yes. They're not caring about that other person. In reality, they hate them just as the parent that spares the rod hates the son. If you really cared about the child, you would have to do something to correct them. If you really cared about that person, you would tell them the truth even if it does hurt. Because it's better for them to know the truth than to be lied to by someone who they think cares about them.
Right.
And to flatter someone doesn't mean to flatter. Okay. Specifically, you tell them things that they're going to like to hear that you don't actually believe. Because if you tell something to them that's good that you actually believe, that's a compliment. If you tell them something good about themselves that you don't believe, that's flattery. And the desire for flattery is to win that person over by the words that you use, even though you don't believe it. You don't think they do either. And so to tell them lies and make them feel good is going to end up hurting them in the end. I think a great illustration of this, maybe one I shouldn't use right now, but a great illustration of this is we've all seen like the talent shows where everybody always tells them how great of a singer they are until they get up on a stage in front of thousands or millions of people and make a fool of themselves. They'd been a lot better off if someone would have told them the truth rather than flattering them. And that's a good example, but we might not be able to relate to that. But it happens just the same in smaller areas. To flatter someone, you know, you tell a kid, oh, you're the smartest kid ever. One of these days, they're going to find out they're not the smartest kid. They're probably actually average. They're going to be crushed.
Yeah.
Right? I always thought I was special. Okay. Anyway, I better not go too far down that one. So choose your words wisely. Choose true words. Choose helpful words. Choose integrity, even when it's hard. Okay. Any questions or comments on this? Okay, then we will end there.